I've got Mark Carlin, the editor of BuzzFlash.com, on the phone. Good evening, Mark.
How are you doing today, Al?
Oh, pretty good. Sound like you got a little hoarse voice going there.
I do, but like all of us, I'm ready to start the work week.
Yeah. All right, great. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for taking a few minutes to talk to us. Mark Carlin, of course, the editor of BuzzFlash.com, and I'm a huge fan of your website, Mark. I think it's just a great. It is so informative. Folks, if you want the real news, now, Steve Crockett and I have talked about BuzzFlash many, many times on the program, and if you want the real news and the straight dope, as we like to call it, you need to check out BuzzFlash.com.
Thank you, Al. We have 35,000 readers a day now, including many, many people on Capitol Hill. We're very proud to have recently interviewed Congressman Henry Bulldog, we call him Waxman, who's been sort of leading the charge in the House to try to expose the corrupt relationship between Enron and the White House, and Congressman John Conyers, who's also been doing his part. So we're quite pleased. We even have an international audience now. We have readers throughout the world, many of them Americans, living overseas, who are very concerned about the future of this country and are patriots. We think BuzzFlash, above all, is perhaps the most patriotic site on the net. We're very proud Americans. We wave the flag with great pride, but the issue is not who is most patriotic. The issue is what is best for the future of this country, the working people of this country, the future of our children. And one of the focuses we have is on hypocrisy. And BuzzFlash, if anything, is a chronicle of hypocrisy, of what we call the Grand Hypocrisy Party instead of the GOP. Our acronym for the GOP is the GHP, the Grand Hypocrisy Party.
I love that, Mark. That's great. You know what we call them here at DTR?
What is that?
Greed, oppression, and propaganda.
two sides of the same coin.
That's right.
We've seen for many, many years now that the Grand Hypocrisy Party has a double standard. They apply the rule of law to Democrats, but they apply the rule of excuses, and we don't accept any responsibility to members of the Grand Hypocrisy Party. I think our vice president is a prime example of this. We all know that in the Clinton administration, as soon as Hillary or Bill Clinton sneezed, we had people in Congress led by Dan Burton, for instance, demanding to have the Kleenex that they sneezed into seized and investigated.
You're kidding me.
And there was no paper that they felt, the Republicans felt, was beyond a subpoena. Now we have the Vice President of the United States, who's been, he and the President, in bed with Enron from day one, saying that virtually any contact the Vice President or President has with anybody
is secret,
is privileged information. And
Mark, how do they get away with this? That's what, you know, many activists that I talk to is how they're getting away with this kind of thing.
I think there's a couple of things we've seen on BuzzFlash. One is you have seen the increased ownership of television in particular by major corporations in America, and those corporations like GE owns NBC, or of course Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox.
Fox, right.
Benefit from the tax giveaways to corporations promoted by Bush and Cheney. They see their bottom line, which includes the media entities they own, benefiting from Bush policies that hurt the working people of America, but give tax breaks to corporations.
So now our news is skewed, Mark. Based upon the corporate ownership of the large media outlets, now our news is being skewed, and so all the only kind of news that we're getting, the only kind of news that the American public is getting, is corporate news.
I think there are exceptions. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like this is entirely conspiratorial. But
I agree with you. There are lots of other venues out there that we can get the real news, but it seems like the real big ones, the big three or four, have the bottom line at heart. You know, that's what they care about first, as opposed to what they should be talking about.
Well, you know, companies like the Tribune Company, the New York Times even, are much larger entities than just media operations.
Mm-hmm.
The Tribune Company is an extremely large corporation that owns many papers, radio stations, television stations, and other lines of businesses. They are businesses now. They are no longer just media operations.
Just news organizations, right.
And therefore, they are beholden, quote-unquote, to shareholders.
Who expect a profit.
Who expect a profit, and therefore, they look to an administration whose tax policies in particularly favor them. I think you still are starting to see, at least in the case of Enron, some of the print media in particular start to ask some serious questions. But clearly there's been a myth, and I want to emphasize myth, of a liberal media. The New York Times and the Washington Post were key papers in carrying out the Ken Starr-led guilt by leak
right.
of the Clintons.
Right, that's right.
But the Washington Post and the New York Times virtually ignored major questions about
the
Bush. Well, when even Bush was running, about Bush business practices going back to the 80s, about Bush's personal characteristics and so forth.
I was just going to mention that. They just virtually ignored his personal character.
Well, and he also, if we want to be euphemistic, had many misstatements or uttered many falsehoods, which I guess in the vernacular we call lies
right.
during the debates.
And he was the candidate that was going to bring integrity and truth back to the White House?
Well, he promised at his inauguration that his cabinet would be above even the suspicion of impropriety. Now it's not a suspicion. It's basically fact.
Yeah.
And yet no one holds him to this in the media. I haven't seen one editorial that's gone back to that pledge of his, including the New York Times and the Washington Post. I might add, though, to get back to your question about how are we in this situation where the Republicans get away with brazen hypocrisy on moral issues, business ethics, and so forth. We have to be frank and say the other factor here is that Democrats generally pull back or shy away from making issues of Republican hypocrisy. I think part of this is that Democrats think, and I think to their credit to a great degree, that you can win on issues alone. The Republicans know they can win on their issues, so they've relied on character assassinations.
And they've been doing it for a long time, Mark.
And they do it. They never stop.
Right.
They've just most recently done this with Daschle, where they ran ads through basically soft money contributions through these think tanks supported by Richard Mellon Scafee and other Republicans.
Those ads are just deplorable, too.
Well, yes, the ads in South Dakota that linked Daschle to Saddam Hussein.
And Daschle, Senator Daschle, of course, went back to work after all the anthrax attacks. I mean, he should be honored among Americans during this time of war. I think as much as any other politician or any other leader in our country, we should be honoring Senator Daschle for his commitment and leadership.
There's no question about it. And if you had a look at Democrats, you'd have to say he's a moderate Democrat. I mean, he is from South Dakota. His state won 60% for Bush. This is no screaming radical. And he was nothing but gracious to Bush when he was elected. I should say appointed. And then by the Supreme Court, he didn't contest the appointment, even though, as we know, Gore won the popular vote by more than 500,000 votes. Ann Bush only survived in Florida because of shenanigans
through the courts.
Well, through the courts and through
through vote counting.
Yeah, Catherine Harris, who was Jeb's surrogate. But my point is that Democrats, I think, are a bit naive about the modus operandi of Republicans, which is when you can't win on the issues, engaging character assassination. And they do this again and again and again. They're like a one-trick pony.
And it's been, you know, unfortunately, Mark, it's been effective for them, too.
It's been effective, and I think, although I think, again, Gore should be president, he won this election. We had a Supreme Court which engaged in flagrant politics.
Oh, my, I've never seen nothing like it.
Well, even if you just look at what Justice Scalia said when they stayed the recount in Florida, that he was, they were staying this because a recount, if Gore were to win, in essence, might damage the reputation of the presumed president, George W. Bush.
Unbelievable! So it was like he was selected back in November by the Supreme Court when they had that first ruling in Bush's favor.
And Scalia said he is the president, and we don't want to have a messy recount, which might show he isn't, because then it would damage his ability to govern.
Unbelievable!
But that aside, we have to admit that Gore, as an honorable man, probably miscalculated and didn't fight Bush enough on the issues of Bush's character.
Because they made the mistake, I think they made the mistake, Mark, of thinking that the Bush team was honorable.
Yes, and this, you know, again and again, I think Democrats have this failing. You can respect them for believing that you can fight a political debate on the issues. But on the other hand, the reality is you end up not acquiring the positions of power that represent the interests of the American people.
Right, because they're just damaging our country.
Well, the Republicans know that the innuendo and smear campaigns work. I mean, we always have in every election almost on the national level, this continued hand-wringing over negative ads.
Mm-hmm.
But the conundrum about negative campaigning is that although American voters, when both say we deplore this, the reality is if you run a very strategic negative campaign in the last week or two of an election, it inevitably brings down the percentage points
of
the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So it does work. Television is so powerful as an influence that negative campaigning works on television.
Well, so Mark, on that note, what do you think of the campaign finance reform that just came out of the House?
Well, we on BuzzFlash certainly have been running articles in support of it. We think it's a very important measure.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that there are those who think that the Republicans will end up, in fact, there was an article I read today in the Post, Washington Post, that this will benefit Bush, not necessarily Republicans in Congress, but Bush, because he is extremely successful, obviously because he's in bed with the Enrons of the world and raising tons of hard money. And then obviously returning favors to his contributors.
In the form of legislation.
In the form of regulation, probably is even more significant.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a slight digression, we have to remember that the only reason that probably stopped Enron from getting more from the Bush administration is one person, a man with principle, Jim Jeffords. If the Senate had remained in Republican hands...
I just can't imagine.
Well, what I conjecture, and we've run editorials on BuzzFlash.com, in fact, we had two last week about this, that many people, the pundits, the conventional wisdom, is that the Bush administration believe the Bush administration didn't do anything. Well, we've pointed out there's two problems with that. One is the word allegedly. We really don't know what the Bush administration did because they're not telling us.
They're not releasing it, right.
But number two is that's really the wrong way to frame the question. The reality is there is every indication, even without the release of information, there is factual documentation at this point that from the time Bush entered the White House, they did everything possible
to help
Enron. And Enron didn't just find out it was in financial trouble last fall.
That's right.
They knew this a year and a half to 2 years.
I think you're right about that, too. And I think that perhaps even the White House may have known about it.
Well, I think the White House did know about it. We have documented on busflash.com, along with others, the various steps that the Bush administration aggressively took to protect Enron from the time they were sworn in.
So a lot of these legislative and agency procedures that might have benefited Enron were perhaps a direct result of Enron's financial difficulties that the White House was trying to help them out of.
Well, they certainly have, let's put it this way, helped them every way they could. We don't yet have a conversation that says, well, help us do this because we're going under.
Mm-hmm.
But we have clear documentation that, for example, probably the most heinous action in the Bush administration, Paul O'Neill, the infamous Secretary of the Treasury, said again and again that he opposed weakening. There was a treaty opposed strengthening the restrictions on offshore banking. At that point, primarily aimed at limiting the ability of drug dealers and terrorists engage in offshore banking, and O'Neill and the administration repeatedly opposed a more restrictive treaty. Well, we know now that the offshore scams were essential to the Enron scam. We know that Cheney very publicly and brazenly supported at one point threatening states to seize property through eminent domain if they did not allow power companies to build interstate electrical transmission grids.
Now, that little fact that you just mentioned, Mark, that's not that well known, really.
Well, this is not like even Private Cheney made one or two speeches, which we had up on the spring on BuzzFlash.com, warning states that the federal government, if they continue to oppose
eminent domain laws, or?
Well, continue to oppose the right of power companies to build power grids across states, that the federal government, the Bush administration, might exercise the power of eminent domain. And that was also a key Enron goal.
That's almost like seizure.
Well, it is seizure.
You know, it
that's what eminent domain did. And you have to think, here's the Grand Democracy Party. Not only were they appointed by the Supreme Court on an issue that violated the most basic tenet of the Republican Party, supposedly, which is states' rights versus federal rights, the Supreme Court intruded on a states' rights issue. But here, Cheney was telling states the federal government would seize their property in essence, although he didn't say this at the time, but we know, to help Enron.
You know, Mark, it's just, you know, the alleged corruption or possible corruption seems like it with the Enron and the Republican Party seems like it goes all the way up to the top. I mean, that's how this is looking, and if the evidence proves this point, boy, I tell you what, the voters sure made a huge mistake.
Well, you know, everyone talks about, is there a smoking gun? I don't think that Ken Lay had to say to Dick Cheney, look, we're going under, you gotta do this. He might have said that. I mean, Cheney and Bush were involved enough with Enron. You know, they're basically part of the same corporation.
Yep.
In essence. So, you know, it's not clear whether Bush Incorporated is a subsidiary of Enron or Enron is a subsidiary of Bush Incorporated. But all they had to do was there in our third headline. Two, the fall, when I think the so-called calls of from NY around to the Bush administration, the six or seven calls, were not to say, help us, but it was to give the White House a distress warning to get far enough away from it that they wouldn't get pulled down in the undertow.
They were perhaps the Bush administration's signal to start their political cover.
Exactly. So my point is that, you know, the prima facie evidence is there that the Bush administration did basically about anything Enron
wanted.
Just let me give you four or five examples.
Sure.
If we just look at personnel, a key thing that happened was there was the head of the FERC, which oversees energy regulation in the United States.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Right. Was a man named Abe Beer.
Right.
Now, Abe Beer was sort of a friend of, and I might call a protege of Trent Lott. So we're not talking here about, this guy was, put into power by Bill, Clinton, you know, in terms of, like, he being a Bill Clinton guy. He was a Trent Lott guy, a fellow guy from Mississippi. Well, Ken Lay called him and said, you know, look, I want to know your feelings on
electricity grid deregulation.
Right. We want to, you know, basically allow for complete deregulation. And Abe Beer said, well, you favor deregulation. It wasn't for complete deregulation. And Ken Lay told him, you know, basically, well, you know, I have a lot of weight with the Bush administration, and I want complete deregulation. And Abe Beer said, well, I understand what you're saying, but this is my policy, and I'm not for 100% deregulation. Well, Abe Beer was out of there in no short order.
Like a month or so later, wasn't it?
And indicated that did occur in a conversation with Ken Lay. The current head of FERC is a man named Mr. Wood, who Ken Lay recommended be appointed to head the energy regulation.
Let me guess, Mark, he supports deregulation hook, line, and sinker?
Yes, and he was the person Ken Lay told Bush to head the Energy Regulation Commission in Texas, and who Bush pointed to head the Energy Regulation Commission in Texas. The White House General Counsel, Mr. Gonzalez, was a partner in the law firm of Vincent and Elkins. Vincent and Elkins was the now controversial and allegedly at fault attorneys for Enron.
Boy, I tell you what, the connections are just... You can't tell them apart, Mark.
Well, it gets worse. The Secretary of the Army headed one of the Enron divisions. That is considered to be part of the Enron collapse.
So not only is this involved in domestic policy, it's also involved in our foreign policy as well. And the Enron connection, I tell you what, it's reaching all the way across into Afghanistan.
It's positively incestuous between Enron and Halliburton. We have an Enron Bush Cheney administration. I don't know what order you want to put that in.
it's actually kind of scary, frankly, Mark. I mean, these people are now running our government, and they're doing it like a corporation. You know, it's like you said, we can't tell the difference whether it's Enron or GOP that's running the country or not.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the sad things here is the Republicans, the Grand Hypocrisy Party, have been very successful, even though, as we know, Bush lost the election. Gore received more votes than Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
But, nonetheless, they have been successful in pulling off many white males, many people who listen to your station down there in Tennessee who believe Bush and Cheney are what we call, or they try to portray as values-oriented Americans, which is sort of a code word for...
And that's the only thing that they win on, Mark, because when it comes to the issues, Americans rushed to the Democratic side by an almost two-thirds level as far as social policy. It seems like the only thing that that the Bush administration currently has on the Democratic Party is the foreign policy issue, the war.
Well, in the war,
and I think that's mainly fear-based, isn't it?
Well,
because right before 9/11, President Bush's numbers were dropping like a rock. I mean, he had gone from like 57% and was steadily starting to drop right before 9/11, because a lot of these things were starting to come out about Cheney and Enron. Some of these things were just starting to get some traction, and then the attack happened.
Well, it's positively Orwellian, and we say that many times on BuzzFlash.com, what is happening. Karl Rove, and this is one of the amazing things, the Bush administration is very out front about its strategy. Karl Rove wrote, and this was reported in the Washington Post and other media, when he spoke to a meeting of Republicans.
Mark, I watched that on C-SPAN, and I saw the whole thing, and I tell you what, I couldn't believe it when I heard it.
And he said, as you know, Al, let's run on the war, and that's what Bush is doing.
That's exactly right.
You know, if you keep people afraid for their lives, then you're going to get them in a position where they drown out other issues. And I don't think it's entirely coincidental that on the day the Enron hearings began, or you had a key witness, I think Ken Lay was going to appear, we have another one of these vague alerts from John Ashcroft that mm-hmm. we're supposed to be looking out for suspicious people. 7 of the 15 they said to be on the lookout for, it turns up, are in jail, and Yemen right now.
No kidding.
Yeah, so they didn't even know that, or they knew it, and didn't care. But let me point out this. Not only are we being taken to the cleaners on the war against terrorism, and I want to point out that from the beginning, like 98% of Americans, BuzzFlash.com said, after September 11th, let's get those terrorists and beat the heck out of them. I mean, we have no sympathy for terrorists
right.
who attack our Americans
and kill innocent civilians without having the guts to take us on. You know, if they have a gripe, then take us on as you should. You know, either on the battlefield if you think you've got the salt for it, but they're cowards to do
they're
that.
They're cowards, and I say, and Buzz flashes it, let's go get them. And you know what? I don't care what you do to them, but anyone in the United States who's got an ounce of patriotism or interest in self-survival is going to be against terrorism.
Right.
And you push somehow, makes it out like, I'm against terrorism. I'm great. It's like, excuse me, we're all against terrorism.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't make you special. The question is, what's an effective war on terrorism? And yes, they did bomb the living daylights out of Cafe Afghanistan. They bombed a country that was in the Stone Age into the pre-Stone Age.
In the pre-Stone Age, right.
And, you know, God bless our men and women, the armed forces.
They take a real tough job.
We're completely in support of them. But the issue is that we've got a commander-in-chief who now has decided to run a, create a permanent war.
Right.
I think
he's going to start another oil war, don't you?
Well, a lot of this involves oil.
Yep.
And again, this is all on record. And the Bush administration, again on record, has supported the Afghanistan pipeline. I'm not saying, as some, I think, pretty far out people say out there, that this whole September 11th issue was created because of...
because of the administration policies, and I don't agree with that either.
I don't think so. I mean, it may be true that
that might have been a response to the policy?
Well, that Bush put pressure on the Taliban to allow an oil pipeline. There does seem to be evidence on that. But you can't say that Bush is to blame because of some demented terrorist
right.
fanatics.
Exactly.
They are solely responsible for their actions, and they should be pursued. But let's just talk about Bush's John Wayne performance in saying he was going to get Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He hasn't gotten him. He hasn't gotten Mullah Omar. We haven't heard anything about the ants.
And you know, right? There are still, you know something, Mark. There are still Al Qaeda cells probably all over the world. And here, you know, I don't know if I'm sure you've been paying attention this week. Now, a lot of the administration officials were coming on some of the Sunday morning talk programs, and there's a lot of talk about us going to war in Iraq again. Okay, but now wait a minute. We haven't stopped the Al Qaeda yet. Why we haven't finished in Afghanistan? Why are we now going on to Iraq now? Okay, that doesn't seem normal to me either. We should finish the job with the Al Qaeda and the Taliban first, and make sure that that's completed before we perhaps send troops into Iraq.
Bas Flash again is no sympathizer towards Saddam Hussein.
The guy's a terrorist.
He's a terrorist and he's a despot. But the issue seems to be that at this point in time, since Bush was unsuccessful in carrying out his very public commitment to getting Osama dead or alive, Osama has eluded us. Mm-hmm. And that means we've failed. And when I say we failed, I mean the Bush administration. They failed to get Mullah Omar. They seem in desperation now to be alienating Afghanis by killing many innocent civilians in a desperate effort to try to nail
Osama.
Now,
mm-hmm.
We have an anthrax terrorist who, by all indication, including the FBI admitting this in the military now, probably came for out of the military research program, mm-hmm. where the CIA... A domestic terrorist, but not just a domestic terrorist. Someone who is affiliated, and this is no conspiracy sort of crackpot theory. This has now been admitted in AP and Reuters reports by the FBI and the U.S. Army that the anthrax that was used came out of a military research lab in the United States. And there were two reports, I believe, on the AP that indicated it may have come out of specifically a lab that was used by a CIA subcontractor for the Army. Now again, these are no crackpot theories. This is stuff that is reported on the AP or Reuters wire services, but the mainstream press doesn't seem to then give any legs to this, and the Democrats don't seem to be willing to pursue this. But let's remember, the targets of anthrax
were Democrats.
Were Democrats, and the so-called, you know, media, the Tom Brokaws, the Dan Rathers, and
so-called liberal media,
and yet
we don't hear nothing about it.
We don't have an anthrax terrorist.
They aren't even asking questions about it, Mark. That's what I find kind of surprising. You just, like you said, we're not hearing anything about the investigation or anything.
So when you say, has the Bush administration succeeded in the war on terrorism, I as a father, want us to succeed. But our president has failed us. He set out as a key objective that the war on terrorism wouldn't be won until Osama bin Laden was killed.
Was killed or captured.
Or killed or captured. And now he's retreated and then said, well, that's not really an indication. We have to move on to other targets. And you have to ask whether we are proceeding in a strategic fashion or simply a fashion to cover up failure and to get a Republican Congress elected in 2002. Any of us,
you nailed it right on the head there, Mark,
can stand up and say we are for a war on terrorism. We all are. The issue is we're all for a smart war on terrorism. And at this point in time, the Bush administration is pursuing a political war and not a strategic war on terrorism that would result in maximizing the benefit of protecting Americans. And that's a very dangerous course for us as Americans.
Well, I tell you what, it's just absolutely a very, very sad day when they are tagging Americans' patriotism to how you vote. And that's exactly what's happening, Mark. You know, they're saying, based upon in those ads, that if you're a Democrat, that you're not a patriot. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Or if you disagree with me, then you're undercutting our men and women in the military. The issue is, at this point, and I don't want to be too tacky about this, but if we're talking about the Grand Hypocrisy Party, and we've pointed this out many times on BuzzFlash.com, we have to point out that the President and the Vice President of the United States, as well as our Attorney General, were men who supported the war in Vietnam and watched other young men die, but refused to go themselves.
Boy, I tell you what, pretty interesting stuff here, Mark.
President Bush had a chance to volunteer for service in Vietnam when he joined the National Guard through his father using connections to get him in when there was a waiting list. And he did not check off on his National Guard application the section that said, I volunteer to serve in Vietnam. And therefore, fought the Vietnam War out of Abilene, Texas. And in fact, the last year of his service was AWOL.
He was supposed to have been in Alabama and never showed up. Wasn't that it?
There is no one that can confirm he ever showed up for duty in Alabama. The press let that one totally drop. Second of all, we have a vice president who used graduate school deferments to stay out of Vietnam and never served in the military and also, again, supported the war in Vietnam but let other young men die. John Ashcroft said that his teaching at a law school, I believe in southeastern Missouri, was essential to the national defense and used that to get out of serving in Vietnam while he supported other young men dying in Vietnam.
Now, perhaps if they had gone themselves, they might have a different perspective on all this.
Well, I just think all those, you know, gung-ho white males who listen to your station and we're calling Bill Clinton a draft dodger. I don't hear them speaking up now and saying we have a commander-in-chief and a vice president. Probably win the Vietnamese over and have them as our allies against China rather than engaging in a war which we couldn't win. So you may criticize him for not serving, but at least he didn't say, well, though I support the war, but let other men die.
Right.
Bush, Cheney, and Ashcroft all adopted the position that the Vietnam War was important for our country, but they let other men die while they made a decision not to go to Vietnam to save their own
lives. To save their own skins.
And we never see
the media touch
any of those white males, particularly southern white males, who support Bush, Cheney, and droves and called Bill Clinton a draft dodger, saying that their president and vice president dodged the draft. Now, you ask a while back about how the Republicans sort of deluded working class, again, particularly white males, into voting Republican. And we said they did that in values. They try to make Democrats out to be unethical and immoral.
Right.
And when you see Republicans acting in that same fashion, Democrats are too good to make anything of it. So, unfortunately, you get this image that, oh, Democrats somehow are immoral and Republicans are all virtuous, when in fact, let's face it.
It's the other way around.
Well, and most politicians are not saints. You know, as Oscar Wilde said, every sinner has a past and every saint has a future, meaning that, every saint has a past and every
sinner
has
future.
A future. Yeah, that's what he said. And I think, Republicans claim they're saints, but they, for the most part, have passed. That came out, of course, in the impeachment when Larry Flynt got Gingrich to resign.
Mm.
mm-hmm. Because it didn't come out at the time. But he resigned, obviously, because he was fooling around with a congressional aide while
right.
married to his second wife,
right.
a congressional aide, 22 years his junior, who then became his third wife.
And here, Mr. Gingrich was one of those ones getting on the stump and talking about fidelity and integrity and character.
Exactly. And then the man the Republicans chose to follow in his footsteps, Congressman Livingston,
right.
turned out to be Capitol Hill Lothario, who couldn't keep his pants up.
Right.
So,
right. And he was going to be the Speaker of the House.
And he was going to be the Speaker of the House. So finally they picked Denny Hastert, who apparently... his chief sin is that when he eats, he gets gravy on his necktie
yeah.
because he's quite an eater. And I think it was the only Republican they could find in Congress who had sins.
Didn't have infidelity questions.
Yeah, he had sins at the dinner table, not of the flesh. And so they said, okay, Denny, you're going to be the Speaker because no one's going to hold it against you.
Yeah.
If, you know, you... eat too many mashed potatoes. So.
Right, that's right, or spill a little gravy on your tie.
But right. I guess my point is, these white males, vote Republican, particularly union members sometimes.
How unfortunate.
And what happens is, they, you know, it's the snake oil salesman. They put out their money, they buy the snake oil, and, meanwhile, they're getting their wallet lifted.
Yeah.
And the Bush administration is
snake oil sales.
Is telling them, "Oh, we're a church going. We believe like you." Bush says, "I'm a good family man. You know, I'm against kids, drugs and drinking. But don't ask about my daughter.
Don't ask about right.
That's private business.
Yeah.
Don't ask
yeah.
about Jeb's daughter's drug use. That's private business." But I'm against everyone else's kids doing it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the white males who go for this scam...
for this John Wayne attitude.
This John Wayne attitude end up getting their pocket picked.
That's right.
This administration, if you ask what their major purpose is in office, it's to further enrich...
their contributors.
Their contributors and those who are already rich. We're rich. They basically believe if you're working class or middle class, you know, it's your dumb luck.
Yep.
And
that's just too bad.
The people who vote for them, I have to say, and end up complaining because they're getting squeezed on Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting squeezed on Medicare as they retire, and it's the working class people who suffer in their retirement. I hate to say I told you so, but you're the ones who put these guys in office.
That's right, and look what's happening.
And look what's happening. And, you know, shame on...
shame on every single person that voted for
shame
him.
Shame on you for voting for him. But, you know, there's an old expression that, you know, if I put my hand on the stove once when it's hot, it's shame on the stove. If I put it on twice, it's shame on me.
Mm-hmm.
And to those people, I say shame on you because you should be smart enough to know that this whole idea of Republican values is a total scam.
It's completely vacuous.
And
because the only thing that they care about is profit margins for rich corporations and individuals.
You know what? We all have some problems in our family. I don't think there's a family in the United States that doesn't have its own secrets.
Sure, and the Democrats have plenty of them.
And the Republicans... included, the Republicans try to make it out as though somehow they have these perfect families that believe in God and uphold high values and that the Democrats are part of some fallen seed. That's a bunch of hokum. The Republicans just don't admit
it. You know, unfortunately, Mark, if that kind of thing, what you just said, wasn't believed, it would be laughable. But you know what you just said? People, real people that go to voting booths actually believe that kind of stuff, and unfortunately it has put, George W.'s father in office, and it also put, well, it didn't put George W. in office, the Supreme Court did that, but it got him close enough for them to select him. And it's just an incredible thing that, that Americans have been hoodwinked by the Republican Party into voting this kind of corruption into office. And frankly, that's my opinion. That's what I think of the administration. It's corrupt from before it got into office, and it's just as corrupt today.
Well, there are many decent, and I would say the vast majority of business owners in the United States run fine, decent, law-abiding businesses, particularly your average man or woman who's in the Rotary Club in small cities or towns.
Right, small and mid-level businesses.
They pay their taxes.
Exactly.
They're honest, law-abiding people. But you know what? They generally vote Republican, and they're also getting screwed by the Enrons of the world, by the global crossings of the world, by the Halliburtons of the world. They can't play in the game of the big guys, and the big guys are screwing them because they're not paying their taxes because the New York Times, we have a story on Buzzflash this morning about how even in spite of the Enron scandal, the use of offshore store tax schemes
is
not continuing, it's exploding.
Oh,
the Bush administration, you could go on Buzzflash.com, it's one of our lead stories today, is continuing to condone this. It was a key feature of how Enron avoided taxes for the five last years.
Right.
As a result, the small business owner has to pay more taxes. We, as just individual people, have to pay more taxes. So this kind of squeezy business operation, which the Bush administration condones, is not the standard practice for your law-abiding, civic-minded, small business and medium-sized business owner. Unfortunately, they do tend to vote Republican, and they should be outraged because they're getting painted with the same brush as the Enrons of the world.
Mm-hmm.
These are riverboat gamblers, the Enrons of the world. They're scam artists, and the Bush administration has been in bed with them from day one.
From day one, boy,
the Bush family,
right,
which makes themselves out to be holier than thou and hides behind their heritage as being from the Eastern Republican political establishment, is a complete facade. Daddy Bush and Junior and Jeb and Neil, we can't forget Neil Silverado Bush, have played on the seedy side of business practices from day one.
Many, many times.
They're basically frequently associated with the bad guys in business and the men and women who see themselves.
But they got a free pass this election.
They got a free pass this election from the press, but the men and women who work very hard with their insurance companies, with their pool cleaning businesses, their landscaping firms, lumberyard firms, farmers.
They're getting screwed.
They're getting screwed, and they should know better than to vote for people who play fast and loose with business practices.
That's right. Mark, we have used up all of our time for today.
Well, Al, you're doing a great job there,
well,
and I'm honored to be on.
I tell you what, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk to us. We've been talking, of course, to Mark Carlin, the editor of BuzzFlash.com. And, folks, if you haven't checked out BuzzFlash.com, you are missing out on the real dope about as far as what's going on in this country's policies. Definitely, you have to check it out. And, Mark, once again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Al.
Okay, and it's great talking to you, and we hope to have you on again soon.